supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Allentown has been widely praised as a beacon of urban revitalization. But Pennsylvania's third largest city has two faces, one of downtown progress and development, the other of neighborhoods where a quarter of residents live in poverty. In the middle sits Democrat Ed Pulaski, reelected as mayor this month, despite a federal indictment hanging over his head. Keystone Crossroads' Annette John Hall reports.
Allentown Mayor Ed Pulaski, dressed Friday casual in khakis and an open shirt, sits in the office he's occupied for the past 12 years, overlooking a downtown dotted with bulldozers and tower cranes. He rattles off his accomplishments, controlling the city's pension costs by leasing the water and sewer system, creating thousands of new jobs, and attracting $1 billion worth of development, all without raising property taxes.
Our accomplishments that we have, you know, in the city of Allentown, people see them, they're tangible, they can see them in their neighborhoods and on the streets, and they know me, they know who I am, and they know my character.
Some, though, do question his character. After a two-year investigation, in July, the FBI slapped Pulaski with a 54-count indictment on charges that he gave city contracts to donors in exchange for campaign contributions. The investigation netted six of his closest administrators and left key positions in City Hall vacant. But Pulaski remains unfazed, having just won a historic fourth term in a row.
We knocked on about 10,000 doors. I walked personally about 660 miles. I think I climbed like 300 stories of stairs, and we really connected with folks.
Allentown has been able to attract new business thanks to a state tax incentive that allows developers to pay their debts if they construct new buildings in the city's urban core. The incentive has produced a handsome new sports arena that houses a minor league hockey team, along with chic eateries and glassy new buildings that line downtown in the waterfront. But to some, this is the tale of two Allentowns.
Those that have are getting more, but those that don't have are getting less.
Lehigh County Commissioner David Jones says the success of the city has been too focused on downtown business development without providing tangible gains and middle-class jobs for the 26% of residents living in poverty.
But the mayor gets credit for turning the city around, but the growth of the city hasn't translated down into the communities and the neighborhoods.
And while crime has decreased every year since Pulaski took office, the homicide rate has surged this year, with 17 so far in 2017 compared to 11 for all of 2016. Pulaski deflects criticism on that point.
This is not Minority Report where we have some precogs or something that's telling us where crime is going to occur. The problem is that there's just too much availability of weapons, you know, and illegal weapons that are flowing into our streets.
Los Compadres Barbershop sits on the corner of a working-class Latino neighborhood. Inside, young men wait to get their haircuts while watching a gory Bruce Lee movie on the flat screen. The people here are Pulaski supporters. They're willing to overlook the charges against him, partly because they don't trust the legal system, but mostly because they know him.
Some people that are taking place in the government, you don't really see their faces or you don't know who's really making the decisions.
Barbershop owner Willie Castillo says Pulaski came in for haircuts before anybody knew who he was.
Ed takes a lot of part in the city of Allentown. He shows up to different events. Even if your event is small and you need Ed Pulaski's help, he will be more than willing to show up for your show his support, because everybody in the city does matter to him.
Not everybody in the city, though, votes for him or votes at all. Election day turnout was 17%, and Pulaski won the state's third largest city with less than 5,000 votes. His fate may soon be decided by an even smaller number of his peers. Pulaski has filed a motion to dismiss all of the legal charges against him, but his trial date is set for January 16th.
I know I didn't do anything wrong, but a judge will decide that shortly. And if he decides to continue to move on to a trial, then we will have a trial in the middle of January. And hopefully this will all be over by February, one way or the other.
The other thing Allentown voters did this election day, amend the city charter to stop mayors from serving more than two terms. Annette John Hall, Keystone Crossroads.
Pawlowski and his two co-defendants appeared today in federal court in an attempt to get the case thrown out. But the judge suggested the trial will go forward in January as scheduled. Transportation officials say one-third of all fatal car crashes over the Thanksgiving holiday involved drunk drivers. In Delaware, there were zero DUI fatalities over the long holiday weekend, though that good news was overshadowed by a spike in drug overdose deaths, as WHYY's Shirley Min reports.
11 Delawareans died from drug overdoses during the long holiday weekend. The deaths involved men and women ranging in age from 23 to 62.
11 is a lot over a weekend. 11 is a lot.
Department of Health and Social Services Secretary Dr. Kara Odom Walker can't explain why, but says the stress of the holidays can be a trigger for people struggling with addiction.
I was asking my team to take a look at prior trends from the previous year, and we saw kind of the same trend where there were these spikes during the holiday time period. These are times when families typically come together. It could bring up issues from childhood. It could bring up the loss or memories of loved ones. It could be that people are experiencing increased financial difficulty with trying to balance, you know, putting food on the table with the expectation of gifts and providing for additional emotional and other kinds of support. And I think that can be very hard to balance.
So far this year, the total number of deaths from suspected overdoses in Delaware stands at 215. Mothers Against Drunk Driving says last year, 37 deaths were blamed on drunken driving in the first state. And state records show 308 died from overdoses. From the Delaware desk, Shirley Min, WHYY News.
Some 12 years after its initial publication, a newly updated edition of Treating and Preventing Adolescent Mental Health Disorders looks at diagnosis, best treatment practices, and prevention efforts. Joining me is one of the co-editors, Dan Romer, research director at the Annenberg Public Policy Center, which published this second edition. Dan, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for your interest.
What was the impetus in this update?
Well, the first edition came out in 2004, and we thought that it would be appropriate to update the book and provide people with the latest information on the status of mental health among adolescents in the U.S., because things have changed. There's new policies that have come into play in the national scene. And there's been some growth in knowledge about how to treat and in some cases prevent these disorders. And there's been some changes in how the American Psychiatric Association classifies disorders.
Let's touch on some of those new policies, primarily the Affordable Care Act and the benefits that this tome says are extended to those who are vulnerable and the implications if the Affordable Care Act is changed.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act extended health care insurance to all young people under the age of 26, which was a major step. It also encouraged greater integration between mental and physical health in terms of service delivery. It provided a lot of incentives for the medical community to cut costs and integrate their services so that mental health care was more appropriately delivered. And this is still a work in progress, but if the Affordable Care Act gets derailed, and some of these efforts have already started to be derailed, like nurse visitation, other aspects like children's health insurance, the CHIPS program has been put on hold. These are all things that are going to harm the health care and especially mental health care of young people in this country.
This edition has new chapters, I believe, on gambling and internet addiction.
Yeah, these are thought of as impulse control disorders, and problem gambling is already classified as such within the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM. But this latest edition, they added internet gaming disorder, which could also include other forms of internet addiction. So one of the things that that we've looked at in this volume is internet addiction and what its consequences are and what some of the things are that lead to it. So the problem with attributing everything to the use of social media and the internet is that this is a very complicated problem. And a lot of the kids that spend inordinate amounts of time in what might be called a condition of internet addiction have lots of other issues in their lives, like not getting along with their parents, not getting along with peers. And it looks as though a lot of their behavior is a coping mechanism for other problems in their lives. And so when you see a high rate of depression and potentially suicidal ideation in those kids, it may not have as much to do with the use of the internet as the fact that they're retreating to the internet. It used to be back in 2000s when we would study depression in adolescents, we'd find it was related to watching TV. And we didn't think that TV caused kids to get depressed. We thought that it was that they were watching TV because they were withdrawing.
Above and beyond the headlines, what are some major takeaways in the course of this study that now updates work done 12 years ago?
The good news is that adolescents, for the most part, today are in many ways healthier than they were 30 years or 40 years ago. There's less drug use, lower pregnancy rates, lower suicide in many cases, and fewer fatalities in many ways. And so for the most part, adolescents are better off today than they were a while ago. On the other hand, we don't really have a coordinated way of thinking about how to improve the health of adolescents. And I think we need a better strategy to integrate all the different systems we have for our health care, the mental health system, the physical health system. These all need to be integrated much better, which is something the Affordable Care Act tried to do, but I don't think we were fully there yet.
Dan Romer, thanks so much for providing insight on NewsWorks Tonight.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Dan Romer is Research Director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center and co-editor of this second edition of Treating and Preventing Adolescent Mental Health Disorders. The Grammy nominations are out, and Philadelphia talent is well represented. The local band War on Drugs was nominated for Best Rock Album, North Philadelphia rapper Lil Uzi Vert for Best New Artist, and The Crossing for Best Choral Performance. Details from WHYY's Peter Crimmins.
The War on Drugs has been around for a long time, steadily gaining ground with fans and critics with its lush psychedelic rock sound. Led by singer and guitarist Adam Granduciel, this year, the band released A Deeper Understanding, its fourth album and first with a major label, Atlantic. John Vitese is the editor of the local music blog The Key at Philadelphia's WXPN. He's been following War on Drugs for 10 years and says this record clarifies the sound that Granduciel has been striving for all this time.
It is like the best, I think, the best document of Adam's vision to date, I think. Like the most refined statement to date.
Lil Uzi Vert, on the other hand, has been performing for just a couple years, releasing his first full studio album in August. The Grammy nominee for Best New Artist performed at the last two Made in America music festivals on Philadelphia's Parkway. With something completely different, the Philadelphia new music group The Crossing has been nominated for Best Choral Performance for a piece they commissioned and premiered 3 years ago called The Fifth Century, by composer Gavin Bryars. The Crossing was nominated last year, too. It didn't win then, but artistic director Donald Nally says a nomination alone leads to plenty of collaborations and commissions with other artists.
Winning is not really as important as having a nomination at this point in terms of people noticing it.
You know, it's easy for me to say that because we didn't win last year.
The nominee list has more artists with roots in Philadelphia, including jazz musician Christian McBride, a product of Philadelphia's High School of the Creative and Performing Arts, jazz keyboardist Joy DeFrancesco, and Temple University graduate Gene Baylor, formerly of the R&B duo Jeanne in the 1990s, now one half of the Baylor Project with her husband Marcus Baylor. The Grammy Awards ceremony will be on Sunday, January 28th. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
North Philadelphia is the backdrop for Quest, an award-winning documentary focusing on an African-American family striving to thrive despite personal struggles and societal hurdles. The film opens in Philadelphia on Friday, and I'm pleased to be joined by Christopher Rainey, a.k.a. Quest, and director Jonathan Olszewski. Chris, Jonathan, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
All right.
We'll get to the film, but how did this collaboration start? How did you two meet?
I was teaching a photography class in the neighborhood in North Philly. This was like 2005. And then kind of swinging into 2006 after class one day, one of my students was like, hey, you know, my brother runs a hip-hop studio out of his house a couple blocks away. Do you want to meet him? So I was like, all right, sure, let's check it out. So he walks me over and we knock on, you know, the door of the Rainey's residence and right. Quest opens up.
What was the original intent? What was the original nugget for an idea of a product, as it were?
Well, actually, it started off as a small project John was doing for a school, and then it progressed into something more. Like he saw something in what we were doing, and we went along with it. Like, cause it was actually we saw what it was doing. Like, oh hey, this is really saying something. This is more than just home movies, because that's what we always thought of it as, home movies for us. You know, in the long run, hey, why not? You know, but when we start seeing his vision and hey, this really could work. And we talked about it, and everything was kind of like a go, slowly but surely. Like, it's so many versions of this project. You know, it's incredible. You know, it's very inspiring, you know, as we went along on this journey.
Very inspiring, and at the same time, so utterly powerful and at times devastating. And those moments obviously weren't scripted. They just came in the course of making this endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, my original intent was that, you know, I fell in love with North Philly before I even met the Rainey family, and experienced it in all of its kind of, you know, its complexity, and just was really drawn to the love that the community has for each other, especially when sort of the system fails and a community is kind of on its own to take care of themselves. And I just wanted to reflect, you know, those layers. And I think that we started off with this idea to do a short little documentary, maybe mostly about the studio and the paper route. But then, you know, it just kind of felt like it's not quite reflecting all of the levels, and maybe we should go a little bit longer. And so, you know, one year goes by and another year goes by, and I think the friendship is what fueled, you know, kind of just the process for all those years.
Let me say that the camera offers an unsparing eye of the grit of North Philadelphia, whether it's the poverty or drug use or despair or lack of educational or career opportunities. And yet at the same time, it is this love song, this homage. And yes, those community moments were among the most poignant for me as a viewer, where the community comes together and rallies, and that's where you feel safe and sound.
Right. It's always like that in our community when some event happens, like something major happens, a kid might get hurt, or you know, somebody might be, you know, need a dollar party for just helping with their bills. Like, we all do that in our neighborhood. The block parties, they're amazing when we get those together, you know, in our communities. Those when everybody come out and, you know, forget your troubles and everybody's friends and, you know, let bygones be bygones, so to speak. It's incredible. Like I hope Philadelphia never takes away the permits that they give out for the block parties.
There are no heroes or villains, though. The couple of times that police are portrayed, it's in a positive light.
Mm. Well, not you know, I think, again, it's about the complexity, you know, and I think that that's what I wanted to reflect, that there's moments where those interactions are positive, but then there's other, you know, another moment in the film where it's not so positive. And I think that's the experience that, you know, people often have, where it's this sort of murky sort of thing. And maybe, Q, maybe you have some thoughts about that.
No, I agree with you totally, because at one, you know, in one sense, everything's fine with some police officers. And in the next sense, you feel like you're being harassed for totally no reason. I've met quite a few officers that's there when I need them. And I've met quite a few officers I wish never, I kind of never met, you know.
Christopher, this decade-long project, imagine what percentage of your daughter PJ's life that represents, and for you, and for your wife, Christina, and for your extended family and friends. When the camera is put down and the editing is done, I guess you can't fully tell yet, but do you have some sense at this juncture, not what it took from your life, but how it's perhaps changed you now going forward without that kind of scrutiny?
I don't know. I think actually in the film, I think it did more than change our lives. I think it changed a lot of people's lives. When people see this film, they become more involved in Black people's lives. They see the similarities because it's been places where we've shown this film. And the first when we first get there, they're like, oh, God. The darkies are moving in. You know, you almost just like that. And then after they see the film, oh, my God, we didn't realize you were just like us. So, and we care so much about you. And you're like, what can we do to help? And, you know, you get all, you know, it's a totally changed environment. And it's amazing, like, because there was no dialogue before we went in, you know, when we first met.
So juxtaposed to building a wall, this is about breaking down barriers.
Breaking down barriers,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. And it's not just for sort of outsider audiences, but this film, first and foremost, was made for North Philly and places like it.
Chris, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quest comes out Friday in Philadelphia before going into wider distribution nationwide. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Christopher Rainey, a.k.a. Quest, and director Jonathan Olszewski. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, Newsworks Tonight.